As time passes by, I'm confident in saying that 2023 is going to be remembered as one of the greatest years in video game history. We've got so many massive AAA hits this year, like Tears of the Kingdom, Baldur's Gate 3, and Final Fantasy 16, and all released in the same year. It's easy to overlook some of the incredible indie games that have been deserving of the same praise and admiration. That's why this episode, I'm going to be highlighting Thirsty Suitors, an incredibly stylish, story-driven RPG about families, relationships, and becoming the kind of person that you want to be. To get to the heart of what makes Thirsty Suitors great, we've invited a guest to give us some insight into the development and the inspiration behind this wonderful game. So Eka, tell us about yourself and your role with Outer Loop Games.
Hi, thanks for having me, David. Yeah, so I'm Eka. I'm the creative director and co-founder of Outer Loop Games. We're a fully remote company, indie studio, about 14, somewhere, depending on the time, 14 to 16 people. For this project, for Thirsty Suitors, I was the game director, but because we're small, I end up doing a bunch of other things, like sometimes HR duties, sometimes, you know, paying payroll and design work and art direction and marketing and trailer. So it varies depending on the day.
Yeah, so there's pretty much everybody has to wear a different hat, I guess. Eh?
Yeah,
Jack of all trades.
Times, yeah.
Yeah, I guess keeping it smaller, I guess, makes it a little more, intimate or a little bit more, I would assume a little bit more cooperative, I guess, when you're that close.
Yeah, I mean, it's at the size, it means everyone has something they can point at in the game that they personally either had an input on or put in directly. So it's really cool. Also, for the type of stories and games we want to make, they're a little, I don't know, different. So that allows, you know, like the bigger the projects and the bigger the team, the more you have to think about a bigger audience. And that means what you can put into the game, what you can say has to be little, I don't know, adjusted, I guess, so that more people could be into it. Making smaller games allows us to take some chances and try some themes like Thirsty Suitors. You know, we can get into it, but it's a lot of our games. This is our second game. So Falcon Age was our first, and both these games are about underrepresented culture and themes. So there's not a lot of games that either explore that or have that as a main premise. So, you know, at the scale, we feel like we're able to do that.
Yeah. I just know, myself going in, I had kind of no idea what the game was. I think I actually came across it. I may have seen it in a trailer or in some kind of announcement thing, but I remember kind of knowing the name just because the podcast that you're named. It kind of intertwined there a little bit, so it caught my ear. But where I found it was on Game Pass. I was actually looking up what was coming out in November.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, that looks like an interesting game. So downloaded it, and it only took a few minutes for me to be hooked. Because like you said, it's just different. Like, it, you know, I'm a bit older. I'm in my 40s now. So I've played everything under the sun. So when something different comes along, it's something like I take notice to. So it was a great experience for me. But for someone who hasn't heard it yet, maybe if you want to give us kind of like a rundown on how you would describe the game.
Sure. It's I think we describe Thirsty Suitors on the Steam page as a stylish, story-driven, turn-based RPG, because that's like sort of the main mechanic, is you're battling. But instead of battling random enemies, you're battling your exes. You play the role of Jala, who's come back, a 20-something-year-old a South Asian woman comes back to her small town in Washington State, and all of her six exes decide to confront her because she hasn't been the nicest person historically. So they all have something to have unfinished business with her. So, and what we do with the battles is take turn-based combat and turn into almost a conversation with someone that you have a emotional history with. And that plays out in these fantastical spaces and battles and abilities. In between those, you're trying to cook with your parents to try to reconnect with them. Again, you haven't been a good daughter to them for a number of years. You've left town and you haven't talked to anybody in 3 years. And you come back after a bad breakup. And then you, as you're exploring town, you're skating. And then there's this whole side story of a essentially a cult run by a bear mascot. They're trying to figure out what's going on there. So there's skateboarding, turn-based combat, and cooking, and all together, kind of put together into a nice narrative to tie it all together. So,
yeah. Well, no good RPG would be without its fun mini games.
Yeah. Oh, tons of mini games. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The it was funny. I was talking to someone about. I was kind of explaining it the same way, and the response I got from someone I was talking to was, "Oh, it sounds like the anti Scott Pilgrim." Where instead of like dating the exes or having to defeat the exes to date me, it's no, you've already kind of defeated the exes. Now you have to go back and clean up the mess.
Yeah, yeah. We definitely get a comparison because it's about like there's not a lot of things about battling exes in the same way. And it's fantastical. And I can see the comparison. But yeah, it's more you're like playing Ramona than you're playing Scott.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so... One of the unfortunate things I find in the video game industry is that people seem to kind of stay in their lane, I guess, to a certain mm-hmm. extent, or kind of hold on to experiences that they've had. So you kind of get stuck into this loop of like, oh, what's the game like, or you right. know, what where did the inspirations? Mm-hmm. So I kind of want to talk a little bit about because there's a few games that. Where I felt like there was inspirations that came from, and uh-huh. I wanted to see, like, just discuss that a bit and see if there's probably some I missed too. But I think the first thing that popped out to me was how Yakuza-like it was.
Uh-huh. Yep.
In the, and like with the animations, like the kind of the over the top, like the thing is it's a very relatable story. Like mm-hmm. The you know you left your hometown to be with your like a loved one like she had left to be with her girlfriend and then now you're coming back after things didn't work out and kind of reconnecting with this small town so it's I mean lots of people can relate with that but it was all the interactions were these like incredibly over the top crazy zany things like. Jala always starts her battles by doing kind of like a somersault or mm-hmm. where like she's like flipping off her jacket and that sort of thing. And then,
yeah.
Like you said, when she gets into these battles with the exes, like I know the first ex tears this, like jumps out of his shirt by like, you know, muscles like tearing it off sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I see that Yakuza kind of like ridiculousness, I guess, but in a fun way.
Yeah, no, we've been calling it Baby Yakuza internally because it's like a, you know, 10-ish hour game. So we wanted to, in the style of something like Yakuza, where it's like a real world setting, but then the battles and the characters and the animations are outwardly, is that what I'm trying to say? Yep. Like, they're definitely exaggerated, right? So when the battles happen, each of the exes have their own inner worlds where it's like very fantastical and have sidekicks and some of them superhero themed. So yeah, we definitely, so if you like Persona type games or Yakuza games, we're definitely in that same genre in terms of turn-based combat. And at least for the last, Like a Dragon, Yakuza 7.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, even like the town that you're in, feels almost like Kamurocho with like the kind of it's a smaller area but there's all these like different stores and places that you go into to do like you can go dancing in the one club but you can go work out with the aunt in mm-hmm. or like fix up your skateboard and another
yeah
there's a little bit of Tony Hawk in the game really because one of the things I found neat was that you're not walking around anywhere. You're always skateboarding.
Right.
So it just gives that extra flair of, it's like, well, you're not just boringly walking from one room or one store or one building to the next. Like you're doing kick flips and you're doing like all these different, you know, skateboard moves just to get from one place to the other, which is pretty fun.
Yeah. I mean, the skateboarding, there's a whole section, a park where there's like deeper skateboarding challenges and things that can be very difficult if you want them, but it's not mandatory. And then exploring town, like you mentioned, Timber Hills is the name of the small town. It's like the town square, and you can essentially rail, slide, and jump through all, you know, like zip lining across, and really have fun with the space. So there's something like, there's definitely, it's like multipliers and things like that, but it's not all sort of the core experience. But for folks that enjoy it, there's tons of challenges.
Yeah, I did, like you said, in the skate park area, I did some of the challenges. Even like you said, some of them could be quite difficult. Like right off the bat, I was like, man, there's very little room for error in completing some of these.
Yeah.
Which I don't mind. Like it's nice. Cause I probably wouldn't have put as much time into it as in the skateboarding part that I did, except it was like my kind of stubbornness. Like, well, this challenge isn't going to defeat me. So I'm going to have to figure out, like, clearly there's a way to get this. So I put in some time there.
Yeah, they are finishable, but not everyone on the team can finish them.
Yeah.
There's definitely some. Yeah, we're like, for folks that really want it, let's just put in some more difficult challenges. But there are some simpler ones too. Yeah.
No, that's good for accessibility.
Yeah.
One of the other thing that stood out to me of the game is kind of just how, like, the story itself, like I said, it's very relatable. It felt very personal. I know I'm not sure if, like, what kind of the process behind writing the story was, like, was a lot of people putting, like, was there any kind of personal stories that were in this, or was this kind of creatively put together?
It's creatively put together. I mean, there's definitely the type of stories, you know, like myself and several other folks on the team are South Asian, and there's like a South African character from one of the producers of South African. So there's like, we definitely, you know, took inspiration from folks on the team, but, it's fantastical. So it's not, none of the exes are based on any of our exes or things like that. There's definitely some personal stories and folks in our families and people we know that we've took inspiration from, but it's a work of fiction. Before my mom listens to this, or my auntie listens to this, it's a work of fiction.
Yeah. So there was no exes calling up the studios and in a rage demanding to know if there was a character based on them or anything.
Right.
Like that.
Not so far. No.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, I was reading that initially you had started off with like a card based strategy game.
Oh yeah. So while we were working on our first game called Falcon Age, which is a game about, it's a very different game. It's a first person game where you play the role of a falconer and then fighting colonizers in this kind of fictional sci-fi world. But we were thinking about wanting to do more different stakes. You know, it's not like saving the world type stories, but like about relationships and family, but do it in a fun way. And so we were talking about arranged marriage, myself and our lead writer, Meghna Jayanth, who's Indian, I'm Sri Lankan. While we're both South Asian, there are some similarities, but also very different kind of cultural and food type things too. So we were talking about the idea of doing a game about arranged marriage, because that's something that she and myself, like, we have friends or families I've gone through. So we're like, oh, that'd be interesting to tackle as a subject. And I think at that time I was playing, probably playing Slay the Spire.
Oh yeah.
Why I thought about it. It's like, oh, it'd be fun to do it like card battle, but in a whole different theme where it's like about fighting suitors or would-be suitors or, you know, maybe the character isn't into arranged marriage or things like that. But then, the more we chatted about it, neither of us have had like personal experience in arranged marriage ourselves. So we didn't think we could speak to it directly. And I feel like games where you could, you know, stories, especially where you can direct kind of speak from your experience or you can have a point of view. I think it was interesting, or at least for us, it's interesting. So we decided to change from arranged marriage to more about this young woman named Jala and her history, family history, and her dating history, and how she's come to terms with in her mid-20s and wanting to change things because things haven't always gone well for her, and then having to face that. What would that be like as an experience? So that's sort of where we started with the arranged marriage and then ended up where we ended up now. But the name Thirsty Suitors was the name I came up with when we was initially thinking about arranged marriage, because suitors and arranged marriage kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah. Well, in the even like the in the town, one of the things is there's no random encounters, but I like how there's these markers in the town where it's gift or grift, and I still am not convinced there are gifts because I
there are. So okay. Some tip: each day there are 3 gifts and 5 battles.
Oh, okay.
So if you get to, and these look like these glowing presents as you skate around town, if you open one up, it'll say gift or grift, and it'll be either, you know, Quenchos, which is the money in the game, or a suitor, very badly dressed, or well dressed, depending on what you think of them, that your grandma from India have sent to win your hand.
Yeah.
And they're really thirsty. They are definitely the thirsty suitors in the game. And if you don't want to battle them, there's a flee option. So you can flee and try to open up another gift, and that might be a gift. So you can try that till you get all the gifts.
Okay. See, I was probably so focused on pummeling the suitors that I didn't even notice the flee.
Right.
But I have to say, like, all the battles, the battles are so unique to me because there's like an ongoing dialogue between the protagonist Jala and whoever she's fighting. Mm-hmm. And you don't really want to leave the battle to begin with, because in some cases, like, they're hilarious conversations. Like, even with the thirsty suitors, like, you know, the suitor will show up in this funny way. Like, I think my favorite was when he has the shoes on his hands and he's like kind of moonwalking
with his hands. Yeah.
Yeah. Moonwalking with the hands.
Yeah.
And then he jumps into his shoes, and then the pattern on his shirt doesn't move, or like, it's, I'm probably not describing it well, but it's like independent. The pattern is independent from physics, I guess would be the way to put it.
Yeah. It's like, we call it screen space. So it's like, it stays static on the screen while the rest of the character is moving. So it looks like it's shifting. Yeah. That was like a weird thing that our tech artist Ben at the time, we were just talking about it, and he's like, oh, I can make that not move. And we just use that on the suitors. It just made sense because they had really loud shirts on.
Yeah. I think it works. It gives that, makes them different from everyone else, which is funny. And then, there'll be funny conversations like where the suitor will be like, oh man, you're way hotter than what your dating profile says. And then she's like, I have a dating profile?
Yeah.
And
I mean,
And then there's so many, like one of the battle, well, we'll get into the battle mechanics in a minute, but one of the defining features of it is that you're trying to put them in a state and into like a buff state or debuff state, I guess. Mm-hmm. So there's like different, you can either enrage them or surprise them or shock them, thirst them. And depending on which, like you'll do the move to put them in that state. And it's usually like some kind of chirp from Jala, which is always hilarious to me.
Yeah. And we took like the status effects you see in turn-based or RPGs, like, you know, you can get poisoned or shocked where you can't move or kind of berserk. And we map them into moods.
Yeah.
So like thirsty makes the opponent's attack weaker. And by the way, Jala can also be in a thirsty mood. Like opponents can inflict on you too.
I love how the narrator will mock her when she goes into those.
Oh moods. Yeah. Yeah.
She's like, no idiot would fall for. Oh damn.
Yeah, the narrator is a version of her sister that's in her head, because she and her sister Arnie haven't talked. So till you do, it's like you have this narrator is sort of she can be real harsh to Jala at times.
Yeah.
But it's also how we sort of introduce the history of her and each of her exes through the narrator too. Mm-hmm. You attack somebody with, you know, or you hit them with a taunt, which is like a status effect, and then they're weak to a number of turns, and then you follow up with a skill that does extra damage for turns. And they're all around moods, like so thirsty and impressive and heartbroken, things like that. Raging, as you mentioned. Yeah.
Yeah. And they all have like a funny animation. Like I love how when it's shocked, these like bulging eyes are put on, like these like really surprised looking eyes. are kind of just like on the character.
Yeah, yeah, it's very, very anime inspired for a lot of the, like, we play with, the game is 3D, but we play with a lot of 2D overlays and 2D effects. And, you know, like when you're cooking, there's like, we do nice paintings of the food and things like that too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I want to do one last comparison to other games, because I think Nintendo players in particular will appreciate this. In the sense that the battle system is very Paper Mario-esque, I would say.
Yes, Thousand Year Door was the original inspiration for this, for the battle system. Yep.
Yeah, and that you could feel that, like, especially with the time based attacks, mm-hmm. like all of them have, and to me, I like the way that you set it up, in the sense that I'm not trying to find an animation to coincide with, like the buttons I'm supposed to press are being shown to me on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm traditionally not a big time-based attack fan.
Yeah,
like there's been a few games where I would normally like a game, but I'm like, oh, I'm like so tired of like hitting the button. Like I kind of fell off Sea of Stars recently.
Yeah,
because there was just too much. Like, oh, I gotta hit this thing every time I fight somebody. But I can say that I did not feel this way at all in the game. This is like my favorite time-based attack game.
Oh, that's cool.
I just think it's designed in a way that you're not. I think fatigue is the biggest thing that you run into with those types of games. But
yeah,
there's definitely none of that like rhythm-based fatigue. If anyone was going to experience it, it would have been me, and I didn't feel that way at all.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, and then we also have a bunch of accessibility options, so you can have it auto do it for you. You can have it hold the button down, or you can just have it default, which is whatever the button presses. And the button presses change based on the type of move and things like that, too.
So. Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I never said up front. So the I played on the Xbox version, like through Game Pass. Oh, I guess mm-hmm. I mentioned I saw it in the Game Pass, but
yep.
But it's I've heard good things of the other versions too. So
yeah, it's on everything. It's on Xbox, PlayStation 4 and 5,
Switch,
Game Pass, Switch, Steam, of course, and Windows PC.
Yep. Let's bring up. So one of the things I noticed is it looks like. Like you said, you've got a small dev team, about 14 to 16 people. Mm-hmm. It seems like a lot of you have been working together for a while. Is that kind of how most of you had met? Or?
So myself and several other folks on the team have been working together for probably 10, 15 years at various other companies. This is my 26th year in games.
Oh, yeah. Been in it a while.
Been in a while, yeah, since I was 19. I started at Bethesda when I was just turned 19, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, and then some of us have, you know, worked together the last 10, 15 years at various companies, and the rest of the folks, because we're fully remote, we've been fully remote for 6 years, most of us haven't met in real life. We're hoping to do that early next year. Yeah, we've been working on this project for 3 years, and... Falcon Age, we're about 7-8 people, and we're up to 15-16. So we hired the rest of the team on this project over the last, first year of the project. So
it's just funny how that works out too. Like, I've been doing the podcast now for, I think we're going on our 6th year next year, and we've got 3 other regulars, Casey, Paige, and Jordan. And it's the same thing with us. Like, we've been working together for years, but none of us have ever met each other, because Jordan lives in Vancouver, Casey's in the US, and Paige is in Australia. So,
yeah, we have 2 women in Australia. Our character artist, Emma, and Anne-Marie, our sound designer, they're both from Brisbane. Magna's half the time she's our writer. She's our main writer. She's in the UK or India. Some of the folks in Seattle, we have Vancouver, Toronto, Northern California, East Coast, like Virginia. So we're kind of all over the place. Oh, and Beijing.
Oh, very global.
Our effects artist, she's in Beijing. Yeah. So it's interesting. We're like a 17-hour gap between West Coast and Australia or Beijing. So it depends. And we work over Slack and asynchronously. And we make it work. Yeah.
Yeah, it's time zones is always a thing. We recently had the time zone or the daylight savings time change. Mm-hmm. So that threw us for a loop a little bit with Paige, but I think it actually worked out in her favor this time, so that was nice.
Yeah, it does. Half of the year it works with the Australians. Yeah. Other half it doesn't, yeah.
Exactly. Actually, I wouldn't mind if we could focus on a couple of the people on your team, because there's a few things in particular about the game that stood out for me. We had talked about it before, like with the animations.
Yeah.
And I know I was shocked to have learned that you have one animation person.
Yeah, Azo. He goes by Azo. He and I have been working together, I want to say 15 years now. I was at a company called Shiny Entertainment in Orange County, California, 2001, 2002 timeframe. And he was in art school there, and he came on for a game called, I worked on Enter the Matrix, which is a movie, you know, a game based on the movie Matrix and the sequels. And then we did a game called Path of Neo, which was a follow-up. And he worked on that. But we met him, he, in his spare time, he does parkour, skateboarding, tons of like weird tricks. And then he was shooting video of doing all that. And that's how he animates too. So he's just an animation machine. Yeah. But also he does all these crazy wild tricks in real life.
Yeah. I was watching, looking at his YouTube channel, and he's got like, yeah, lots of videos, a few tutorials, which I thought was funny.
Yeah. How to wall run and double jump in real life. And he also does martial arts and wushu, like all sorts of things. It's the most eclectic collection of random abilities I've ever met in one person. ever seen in one person. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. Well, and it was funny too, because, you know, like I said, everything's exaggerated and you have all these crazy animations. But then when I saw the video of him redoing the same things in real life from the game, and I was like, oh crap, like that's crazy. Like,
everything animated, he hand animates everything in the game, but then he tries to recreate those in real life. Mm-hmm. So it's like people are like, oh, does he just shoot video and use reference? It's like, no, he does the other way around. He animates it and then tries to. Yeah. I think he calls it post, like, you know, in film, it's called pre-visualization, where you're like doing, you know, shooting footage or whatever first. And this is like more post-visualization where you're trying to recreate it in real life.
Well, it made me think like one is like, I could picture him like with one of those suits with the little balls on it, doing all those moves in like a soundstage. But it's, yeah, neat to hear that he does that first and then tries it out later.
Yeah, it's because there's an exaggeration that in the animations, even though they look like they could be real, that you get from hand keying animation versus mocap with the ball suits. Yeah.
The other thing that stood out for me in the game was how incredible the voice acting was.
Oh, there's 21 speaking roles and 19 actors that we hired for those roles.
So. Yeah. I was curious how you came across them, because I know like I play a lot of Japanese RPGs, and I think there's like a pool of only about 20 people that you notice. So you're like, every time I hear someone's voice, I'm like, oh, there's, you know, Eric and Lynn back, or they're like, I just like, I can name all the people. But I was looking on your list, and it's like, they were almost like, some of them had some other voice acting credits, but for a lot of them, it was like, no, they're like actors. Like not
I mean, voice all the characters are black and brown and queer characters, so we wanted to be close to the character as possible in terms of, you know, a voice actor. Mm-hmm. So like Farah Mirani, who plays Jala, she actually sent in a reel when we first started, and then the rest of folks we found through casting. We have a great casting director in LA, and we, you know, it was about, we have 9 hours of dialogue in the game altogether. Mm. So it's quite a lot of them. And then we had, you know, we found folks, like we did character bios, each of the characters, and we try to find folks that fit. The hardest one was one of our exes, Andale, is South African, and all the readings we were getting were not the right accent. Oh. So we reached out to casting folks in South Africa and got somebody that fit the specific sort of dialect and region we wanted. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of it's just like, a lot of these folks are not, you know, very like well known, but they've been in, like, there's a show called Kim's Convenience, which I love. And so there's two characters from it that I, so Mr. Mehta, Sujit Varghese, who plays Mr. Mehta in King's Convenience, plays the dad and also plays the tiger in the game.
Oh, okay.
And his wife plays Auntie Chandra. Her name is Laura Patnick, but she plays Auntie Chandra, who's a jealous bodybuilding auntie in the game.
Okay, that's fine. I didn't catch it in the game, but yeah, I loved watching King's Convenience. It's weird seeing Simu Liu, such a big star in Marvel.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I wouldn't have expected that, but yeah, it was a great show. It cut down too early, in my opinion. But
yeah, we use all union cast, so these are folks that are like working in film and TV, not just like massive roles or anything are well known, but like on smaller shows and things. So, which is also, you know, our publisher's Annapurna, and we had opportunity if we wanted to hire sort of more well-known talent or names, we could have, but sort of the spirit of the game, I wanted to work with folks that are really good voice actors, and they might have not gotten the same kind of roles in other projects. So, and that was a great thing we saw. I was in every voiceover session. It was all done remotely because folks were in LA and Vancouver and New York and Toronto. But every single one of them came on, read the script, or like, I've never read a character like this in the kind of roles I typically get. So it was really great to hear that from those folks.
Yeah, I thought the thing that I assumed, because just the way things have been going, everything's remote these days. So it was impressive in the fact that all the moments seemed to be caught. Like it seemed like everything flowed well together, like in the sense of like they were capturing the emotion of the moment. Like,
yeah,
I know a lot of times in indie games, like there's not a whole, like, indie developers don't have the same kind of budget. So you tend to see like the, maybe not as much focus go into the voice acting, or it doesn't, yeah. it can come off like someone reading a script, I guess. Like, but this, like, it just felt like that they were kind of, I don't know, they just felt like, you said maybe it was just because you picked the people that played the role so well that it just all felt very natural.
Yeah, and I think we had a great Ashley, who's our casting director, she's amazing. So it's also like the it's a combination of the writing, Meghna Jayanth, our lead writer, and Nadia Shamas, who also wrote some of the characters and scenes. It's a combination of good writing and pacing, the right direction, the right talent, you know, the right actors, all that stuff coming together, I think makes a difference. So.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that kind of tied everything together that stood out was the soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't believe how good it was. I was like, wow, this is amazing. Like,
yeah, Ramsey Karubi, who I listened to the Boyfriend Dungeon soundtrack, and I was like, really liked it. And I reached out to him, and you know, he's been on this project for 3 years. I think he ended up doing 54 different tracks.
Oh, jeez.
It's so many. And he did a great job. And we needed to do some singing on him. So we found a vocalist, Pri, who's out of Toronto, but we found her on TikTok and Twitter. And she's did a great job.
Yeah. I've added him on Spotify because the Thirsty Suitor and the, I didn't know he had done Boyfriend Dungeon. I was listening to that this morning.
Yeah. It's great stuff.
Yeah.
He's so talented. So, yeah. Yeah. Every time he drops a new track, he's always like, I just been messing around with this. Everyone's like, everyone on the team just goes wild because it's always so good.
Well, I'd imagine like it's this kind of mixture of like it's very modern sound, but then you can kind of get the kind of, I don't know, traditionally Indian kind of motif, I guess, or
yeah, I mean, there's definitely some South Asian influence depending on the song. Mm-hmm. So for me, I put together a huge playlist when we first started because music is so important to me because I do all our trailer work and I always think about sort of pacing and like what is our first trailer going to be and what kind of music. So I put together a huge playlist for Ramsey. A lot of it's like 90s hip hop stuff and a mixture of things, kind of R&B and kind of romance breakup songs and just eclectic mix and some South Asian music influence. And then he just took all that and just started creating new things out of it. So just, and then as we're developing the story and playing through the game, we do a lot of play tests with the team and he can just see it, record it, the gameplay and then try to make the track work for that. That's usually the process. A lot of iteration over time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, again, one of the big things for me is the chemistry of like everything just kind of dancing together well, like between the battle mechanics with the music, with the writing and the voice acting, like it all just felt so natural. Like you could just, I ended up playing, I think I only played the game like over 2 or 3 days because I would just sit down for like, you know, oh, I got, you know, I'll put in an hour or two here. And then it's like 4 hours later, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, again, like, you know, big deal with this, again, the idea of a smaller RPG. You know, we wanted to purposely make it smaller. Like, you know, some folks are playing, finishing six, some folks are spending 15, 17 hours because of all the challenges. But
yeah,
somewhere around 9-10 hours was a sweet spot, which allowed us to make the pacing of the story and all the sort of the battles be more impactful, because we're not trying to pad it out for 100 hours, essentially.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is that the pacing felt very, very nice, because you kind of, you know, I guess the X would be kind of introduced, and then you'd have a little bit of a side story with the Soundy, the bear, the cult loving bear, or the cult creating bear. But then you kind of just get right into the conversation with the X or the fight or whatever, things together sort of thing.
Right.
So yeah, there's a very natural pace, and it felt like the segments is like, you have like one X and you're like, okay, this is kind of like their segment, and it all flowed together really well.
Yeah. And there's some kind of resolve, because all the battles end in some sort of a friendship, and then later you can do favors for the X's so that there's like extra missions and things and to get to know them a little better.
The attention to detail too. One of the things that I laughed out loud about was I don't think this is really a spoiler, because we know that Tyler's an X, mm-hmm. but in the boss fight, I guess, with Tyler, I kind of thought this was going to happen when I was about to hit the summon mom. as the move, and she wouldn't hit Tyler.
No.
I knew that was going to happen.
For the listeners, we should also say you can summon a giant version of your mom, and she slaps opponents with her slipper. But Tyler is a family friend, so mom won't do that. And we play with the mechanics and tropes for the story a lot too. So and you can also, you know, summon your auntie to buff you up through a training montage. You can summon the X's, you can summon a version of Soundy the Bear. Yeah, we have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. I'll have to ask you off the recording about I might have skipped the ending for Soundy. I know what happens, but I'm not sure what happens specifically to Soundy, so you'll have to remind me to ask you about that.
Okay, cool. Yep.
I guess I was curious, like, now that you kind of go through, like, I know it's a huge process to make a game, like years of work and that sort of thing. I was curious if there's anything, like, now that you're kind of in the process of decompressing, is there any kind of, like, if you had 5 minutes with your previous self to be like, you know, impart some advice, is there anything that you can think of that you would wish you had known back then?
For this project or just game development in general?
Either one.
I think, I mean, this project specifically, but starting the company 6 years ago, I wanted to enjoy the process and not just, it's not about the end project. I want to enjoy the process with folks I want to work with and be creative with. Because I spent, like I said, I've been 25 years in games, 26 years, but a lot of those years spent on projects and crunching and spending a lot of time. But I look back on those projects, I'm like, I would rather have that time back. No project was worth the amount of time and crunch I put into some of those. So as I've gotten older and starting, you know, our company, our sort of values are about, you know, we've switched to a 4-day work week 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago for this project. And while burnout isn't specifically about time put in, sometimes it's about sort of the what you're working on too. So trying to find a project that folks can identify on the team with, and doing it in a way where we don't burn people out. That's been the biggest change on this project. And I would have liked to have done that earlier, but I think it's, I don't know if the industry was ready for it. It was just sort of the norm and expectations of people who are younger and didn't have families and kids and things like that. So it's just like finding that right balance. We're trying to do more and more of that as we move on to the next project and the project after that.
Yeah, I remember even when I was young, it's easy to think that you know everything. And then now I'm like, man, my 20-year-old self didn't know nothing.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm in my 40s. My 35-year-old self probably didn't know nothing still. So I'm more about sort of enjoying the process of the things we make and making sure everyone's involved in it, so included in it. So.
Cool. I'm not going to stupidly ask you to tell me about what you're working on next, because I know that's probably trade secret.
I don't even know, because we're going to take a break. So I'm figuring
out. You haven't? Okay. I knew. I guess the only thing I'm hoping is that you still have more on the way, that there's...
No. We have a couple of thoughts on it. We've thought about it, but we really like how Thirsty Suitors came out. We like sort of the relationships, the drama, the dramedy, I guess, and we like characters and narrative. So it'll definitely be in this style of game, probably. So we really enjoyed making it.
No, that's good. Looking forward, I guess, plenty of stories to tell. So
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, well, I want to make sure to plug. So like you said, Thirsty Suitors is available on every platform. So Steam, PlayStation, Nintendo, Xbox. It's in Game Pass now. So if you have Game Pass, definitely recommend you to pick that up. Even if you don't, it's Christmas time, it's the holidays, you can ask your family to buy it for you. You could impart the game, you can give it to it'd be a great gift to give someone else.
Yeah, and in the US it's $29, it's $30. So.
Oh yeah, perfect. Yeah. So we talked about it, I talked about it a little bit on a previous episode, and talk glowingly, and I'm trying to convince everyone else to pick it up who's on the podcast. So maybe we'll have a more in-depth, like a spoiler cast later on.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I definitely recommend everyone pick that up. Terrific game. It's kind of right in the alley of the games that we talk about on the podcast. So I'm sure there's plenty of people out there that will enjoy it.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Is there anywhere, any places that you'd would like to plug, of like where people could follow you or the Outer Loop or anything like that?
Unfortunately, we're still on Twitter/X.
Yeah.
It's still the place that a lot of folks on games that we've hired half our team through Twitter, so I'd like,
yeah,
it's been like, and that's still the best place for us to talk to folks. So yeah, I mean, we're on at Outer Loop Games on Twitter, and then the rest of the team is on there too. So.
Okay. Well, if you ever want to make the jump to, what's it called? Blue Sky. I have enough codes for your entire development team. So.
Oh yeah. I'm on Blue Sky too, but I got to start using it more.
Yeah. We're in this like weird transition of like, some of the people I follow have already moved to Blue Sky. And then, there was threads for like a week, but then nobody seemed to use it. So I haven't been on there since it came out. And
every time Twitter or X has some dumb thing happen to them, the Blue Sky invites go up again. So <Yeah. laughs> maybe eventually they'll just explode.
Implode. Well, when they make good on that, everyone has to pay to be on this platform.
I'm done.
I think that's the end.
That's my place. Yep.
Yeah. Well,
same.
The Blue Sky server will hopefully they'll be ready for when that overload of people comes running over.
Yeah, exactly.
And then otherwise, I guess you could just head over to your webpage for like Outer Loop Games, so that you can find out more about the game. And yep. Your previous game is still available as well. And yeah, and I know personally, I'm looking forward to the next one. So
me too.
Yeah. So I want to thank you very much for joining me for this. It's always fun to like play in a really fun game and then learn more about it. So to really get in there and find the inspiration, I think is really interesting. And I hope a lot of people enjoy this episode.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. All right, before we go, I would just want to update the ongoing Thirsty Mage Game of the Year list. So in the previous two episodes, we had listed Diablo 4 and Final Fantasy 16, as well as Tears of the Kingdom and Octopath Traveler 2 as four of the 10 top 10 lists that we have ongoing. Like I said before in previous episodes, we're not really picking a game of the year specifically. We're pretty much come to a consensus on the 10 that, you know, four of us have all found the most fun this year and enjoyed the most. And we just came up with an unranked list of 10. So the next two on our list is Baldur's Gate 3 and Star Ocean Second Story R. So I'm not going to get into too much detail on these ones, just because for Baldur's Gate 3 specifically, we've had multiple episodes in that one. I know on our episode 224, we were doing some Act 1 impressions, if you wanted to kind of get an idea on those. And then we also on episode 230, we did some later game stories from Baldur's Gate 3. So obviously the stories episode is a little more spoilery than the Act 1's impressions. We kind of keep it to Act 1, but we try to not spoil as much as we can, but still sharing our experiences. And for Star Ocean, I'm sure there's going to be an upcoming episode soon. I know Jordan has finished the game. Paige and I still need to finish it, so we'll probably work on that before we get into too many deep dives in that sense. But we did have an earlier episode, and it was, I believe it was episode 231, where it's not actually the episode title is starting our Christmas wish lists, so this is back in October. Paige and I had talked a bit about Second Story R and some other demos that we were playing at the time. So if you wanted to get more details on those two terrific games, like I said, Baldur's Gate 3 and Star Ocean Second Story R, incredible games. Second Story R kind of following the vein of Octopath Traveler 2, but it's a remake of an earlier game. So it's just kind of neat to see that in a new form. So yeah, I just want to thank our guest, Eka from Thirsty Suitors. It was very enjoyed the interview a lot, quite a bit. Always great, like I said, great game. Always fun to learn, but you know, some stories behind its creation. And just want to remind everyone, we're getting pretty close to Christmas by the time you're listening to this. I'd imagine it's probably the week before, I believe, is when this will go public. So yeah, if you're looking for any last minute stocking stuffers, I know Jordan's new book, A Game in the Life, is now in physical format. So if you were kind of holding on purchasing a digital copy of his book and was hoping to in the hopes of getting a physical one, those are now in stock. So if you head over to thethirstymage.com, and in the middle of the screen is a picture of his book, and there's a Get It Now link. So if you click on Get It Now, it'll take you to kind of a landing page for his book where you can choose digital or physical, and then you can kind of choose the different retailers that you could purchase that from, depending on your preference. So yeah, just a little gift giving idea if you're looking for something to give that video game fan in your life, or if you just want to gift it to yourself, that's cool too. But just want to let everyone know that physical copy is now available. So I want to thank everyone again for joining us on the Thirsty Mage. I know next week's episode will be, I believe we're doing the end of the year where we're talking about the final four games and kind of completing our list of 10 games for the year. So I look forward to that. And then we'll actually have another developer interview coming up after that we'll be recording shortly. So that'll be fun for another excellent RPG. So, yeah, thanks again, everyone, and we'll see everyone out at the next Thirsty Mage. Bye.